Hello, Jeff Logman. Hello, Tony Smith. How are you guys?
Doing well. I was just doing a little bit of quick research on the number that you were asking about there, the punt and interception return in the same game. As far as I can tell, not including kick returns, so just punt and interception return specifically in the same game, there's been 62 games since the merger.
That's all?
Yeah, 62 games where a team has accounted for both of those in a game where
they've had... That's more than I would have thought, actually.
Where that's lower than I would have thought.
Yeah, one team had a punt and an interception return for a touchdown. The teams that have done that have only lost four of those games.
So what percentage is that?
That would be four out of 62.
It's 58, yeah.
Hold on.
58 divided by 62.
Yeah.
We'll hook you right up.
We're going
to
do this.
We're doing math on Jaguars right today to lead off today. It's very high percent, people.
93.5.
Thank you, Tyler. Tyler, the quickest to the calculator.
What is it?
93.5. Is that what you got?
No, it's 6.4%.
You said 58 divided by 62.
Yeah, six, right. You're looking,
so you
at,
went with the
you're looking at the other percent. He's looking at 93.5, 6.4 adds up to 99.9%. When you round out, you're just looking at the amount of times you win.
The Jaguars,
the Jaguars chances. He's looking at the chances of Detroit winning that game, which are 93.5. Either way, you're up against it when you put yourself in those situations, Jeff. And that's how that's part of how you hold a team to 14 yards rushing. You take away two of their possessions. Right? I mean, honestly, it's not like Detroit was going to run for a whole lot of yards regardless in that game. You know when they weren't going to run for any yards? On 4th and 2.5, they weren't going to run for any yards, right?
No.
What do you make of that play? I heard it on the broadcast.
I said it before, right?
I know you did.
Just going to try to draw them offside.
Right.
And it was very clear because when Matt Stafford is trying to act like he's in a rush, if it's 4th and 2, the opponent is not going to be in a rush. They're going to take their time, make sure they get great communication, get the play the exact play that they want from the sideline. They're not rushing to the line of scrimmage in that situation with a lead to go for it on 4th and 2. They're just not.
If it's 4th and 6 inches, maybe they're going to try to quick count you or something like that with 2.5 yards for a team that hasn't run. How many 2.5 yard runs do they even have in the game, right? So, understandable. So what's going through Derek Mark's head?
I don't have any idea. I mean, he had it earlier in the year, and I remember in the broadcast I said, you know, that's the second time that he's done it this year. And I thought it was San Diego, but I wasn't sure at the moment. But, I mean, now I am. It was the San Diego game where he did that. And you just can't – I mean, you can't do that. I mean, I made the comment during the broadcast that that's not even a rookie mistake. I mean, that's because, you know, I mean, you're 9 games in, 10th game in that you're playing. So, I mean, there's no more really true rookie mistakes, you know, for somebody that's been playing as a rookie all year long.
Right.
I mean, that's past that. I mean, that's, you know, and Derek knew it. I mean, as soon as he did it, he walked to the sideline and, you know, he took his helmet off and he knew. But I mean, come on. I mean, but you look, I mean, you can point to other situations.
Certainly.
On that drive. I mean, you had a 3rd and 4, a 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, and a 3rd and 14, I think it was, on that drive. I mean, so there were 4 other opportunities to get off the field on 3rd down, and you weren't able to do it, you know. So, and then
but none of them leave you with not enough time if they convert that last one, right? I mean,
exactly.
You know, so any of those, you still had another opportunity to stop them. That was kind of your last opportunity to realistically stop them and have a chance to do anything, to have the time to realistically go down the field. So, I mean, it's something different, it seems, every week. Jeff, there are some themes that are similar. I mean, again, Blake Bortles made some good throws, but, you know, just – overall accuracy is not there. It's not pinpoint. No matter what his completion percentage is, they're still making a high degree of difficulty on some of the short passes. And, you know, it's the little things like the 2 interceptions are both on balls that are either behind or high, or high and behind to Marquise Lee. So it's just that little bit, you know, you can say, well, he hit him in the hands, but he hit him in the hands because the receiver's reaching back behind him. You know,
right.
You got to be better on those short throws.
Just to clarify, on that one drive, there was not a 3rd and very long. It was a 3rd and 4.
Okay.
3rd and 6. Then you had the 4th and 2. Then you had another 3rd and 5. You know, so, I mean, there were 4 opportunities on that drive.
Well, the 3rd and 5, is that when they stopped him and forced the field goal
No, there was third and 12, I think.
Three third downs that the Detroit Lions converted prior to.
Oh, prior. Okay, prior to the fourth down.
Yeah,
the third and long was the.
Two before, one after.
Yeah, was the drive before where Telvin got lost. It was the drive before. It was like third and 14 or something like that, yeah.
Which is a shame for Telvin because he played his guts out.
Well, look, he an emotional game, and, I mean, I give him credit for playing. But, you know, the last drive, Telvin didn't play very well, you know. But I give him credit. I mean, what a tough situation to be in. You know, I can't imagine dealing with that and just waking up, you know, and trying to go about a normal day. But then to be able to be at your peak physically and mentally, it's not easy to do, you know. So, unfortunate for Telvin. What an emotional week for him. And, you know, the one thing that I was very impressed with is the owner. I mean, he very supportive in everything. The organization, very supportive of Telvin. Obviously, when he is dealing with a loss such as he has been dealing with, to support him through that, to allow him to make the call, and then he wants to play, and he's got a funeral the day before, to make that happen to where Shad Khan says, look, you know, we'll take care of it. You know, we'll fly you back to Detroit. I'm going to send my plane down there. Wow. I mean, that's first class.
Sure.
You know, and I think that from a fan standpoint, from a player standpoint that's around the league, to see an owner how, look, he wants this organization to be first class, from the facilities to everything that's available to the players to be at their top, at their best. And then to make sure that in one of their time of needs to be able to provide, that was pretty impressive to me and impressed the heck out of me.
All right, we will talk Jaguar football with you throughout the course of the next 2 hours, both looking back at the loss to Detroit that dropped the Jags to 2-8 on the season, and looking ahead to the Buffalo Bills, where Rex Ryan has declared the Jags the best, maybe
two. That's the best two-win team I've ever seen.
Yeah, there you go. even teams that have started the season 2-0, Tony, none have been better than what he's seen from the Jacksonville Jaguars at 2-8 at this point in the season. So we'll get into that. Question of the day, as it is typically when Jeff Logman's in with us, is just to ask you to send your questions for Jeff if you have them Jaguars-related about the product that you're seeing on the field, where they go from here over the remaining six games of the season. You know how to get on board on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Logs56, LOGS56. Jaguars Today Facebook page up and running. Of course, you can call the program at 641-1010. That's also the text line number driven by Duval Ford. The Tom Bush Family Dealerships brings you the fan feedback question, giving you that opportunity to query Jeff Logman on anything Jaguar-related, as that's what we're doing here on this Tuesday. Just underway, live at Everbank, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Jeff Logman here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today.
I don't know what you say when a guy's unblocked and right there misses the tackle. Yeah, it's execution. If you look and say, you know, coaching, what can I do? How can we coach this better? How can we talk about near foot, near hip? You know, how can we, you know, show a visual of that? And so I think as a coach, you always take responsibility for it, and the player will take responsibility. So you just keep painting a picture of how it should look like. But those tackles we got to make.
That's Gus Bradley talking yesterday, guys, about –
two guys.
The go ahead. About the punt return, where, you know, whether or not Andre Roberts kind of half signaled a fair catch. Guys were going full speed trying
was
to tackle.
Not, that was not a fair catch signal.
No, it was. According to the letter of the law, it certainly wasn't. It is. I don't think it necessarily impacted this play, but I do think that
you're dead on the money.
The league needs to do something about this half wave gesture.
It was very clear that it was not a fair catch signal. It was very clear that the coverage unit did not think that it was a fair catch signal. And you didn't have just one guy that was unblocked. You had two with opportunities at making the play, Carson Tinker, Miles Jack. You had
so what happened?
Hayes Pollard.
They just whiffed?
Hayes Pollard had – when you're covering on punt, everybody has to have a certain leverage. Okay, the center – the long snapper is what you call, you know, killer. He goes straight to the ball. He doesn't worry about lane responsibility or anything. He's a headhunter. Personal protector is a headhunter. they get to go and do whatever they want. If you're a left guard or left tackle, you need to keep the ball on your right hip. So you need to make sure that it's not going to get outside of you or out-leverage you, because then it doesn't allow everybody else to do their job. If you're a right guard or a right tackle or a right wing in punt protection and in coverage, it has to stay on your left hip. You're keeping it to your left. And Hayes Pollard was in perfect position. He's a left guard or left tackle, I believe it was left guard. And he's in great position. Carson Tinker misses. Miles Jack actually misses it, and the ball goes outside of him. Which that can't happen. It needs to go to the left of him if he misses it, because if he went to the left of him, then Hayes Pollard is right there and able to do his job. And then Denard Robinson's got to do a better job. When you're a personal protector, you got to be able to be more of a wizard coming down the field. And Yannick Ngakoue had a very poor effort on that punt coverage. Unacceptable effort. And that has to change.
So that sounds like more than two, right? That sounds like at least four guys.
Yes, it wasn't just one. Yeah. I mean, that's what happens when things like that. You know, look, if one guy ends up, you know, getting beaten as responsibility or technique, that happens. But that's when everybody else usually covers you, you know, and you got the swarm type of effect. And it just, you didn't have it because you had a couple guys that were out of position, and one of them didn't have great effort and not good enough, and that's what happens. Pretty simple.
One guy you talked about here with us on the break a moment ago that you say is playing with great effort right now, and you're starting to see an improvement just in the results as well, as Dante Fowler Jr. Tell us what you're seeing on tape.
You know, and it's, people are probably saying, well, you're just saying that, he gets personal fouls and everything. Look, you know, I realize all that, and he's got to clean all that part of his game up, but I thought he made great progress in this game because his pass rush was much more effective, and I think, I don't want to say well thought out, but it looked to be more planned, which is, I think, is a big step for Dante Fowler. And he had some great pass rushes, and people say, well, I didn't see it on TV because the ball is gone. You know, look, great pass rush. Sometimes you have a great pass rush move and the ball is just gone, and that's how it works. But he had some excellent moves to where he was coming free, was getting ready to get a sack or get a hit on the quarterback, and then the ball is gone. But his effort is just unparalleled. I mean, just to watch him on the field and how he flies around. Look, I've always been a guy that I have great respect for players that play the game the way it's supposed to be played. You hear a lot of players talk about that, former players talk about that. Play the game the way it's supposed to be played. Dante Fowler plays the game the way it's supposed to be played from an effort standpoint, play in and play out. He has the ability to play at a high level of speed, play after play after play after play. And there's a lot of – and I don't – it's got, that's got to be a lot of it. It's just genetics. You know, the ability of the body to recoup and to recover for a next play, but he's got that. And it's fun to watch, and it's fun to watch him on the field because, you know, when you're watching the film and watching it from the end zone or even the All-22, the end zone I think is the easiest comparison because it's sideline to sideline. Look, he's so much faster than everybody on the field. It's unbelievable. You know, and I'm excited for him because I think, you know, if his mind is right, and if he focuses and has the will to get better, which I think he does, I mean, he is going to be a marvelous football player. And a lot of times people, you know, get onto him because he's got the personal fouls. Well, Dante's got to be better than that.
He does, but that's controllable.
It's his first year.
Right. But, well, regardless of its first year or not, I mean, he should know not to push Brock Osweiler in that situation or put his hands on him, whether it's his first year or not. But those are completely correctable instances.
Easily correctable.
You can't will a person to have the athletic ability and the drive that he has.
No.
Play in, play out.
No, and he's fun to watch, and I enjoy him, and I enjoy watching him. And I think that, you know, the bad decision things will go away. We got a player who has a very unique skill set, and it's one that you rarely ever see. I'm just telling you, you rarely ever see a skill set like he has, and he's going to be fun to watch and fun to watch him get better in his career.
All right, let's get to some questions for you, Jeff, coming in on the text line on Twitter and the various outlets, 641-1010, if you want to be on the program and get directly involved that way. You're certainly welcome to do that. This one on Twitter from Senior Fuentes, Jimmy Fuentes, on Twitter. Could you grade our free agent acquisitions to this point? I think he's talking about this year. You mentioned Beecham, Prince, Gibson. And looking back, Jeff, let's just you know, just quick thought. You don't have to give a letter grade if you don't want to, but we'll start with Malik Jackson, the high-priced guy, $90 million guy. I think he's played better recently.
He's been playing very well.
Overall, pretty satisfied with what they've
got. I'm happy.
I don't
ever try to draw a performance comparison to a free agent to what you're paying them because, you know, look, when you're in free agency, you overpay. That's what you do.
Okay, but in terms of what they expected from the on-field production and what they're getting, you think they're pretty satisfied?
I think he is, over the last month, he's given you exactly what you expected. And I think he's a very good pass rusher. I don't want to say he's a great pass rusher. He's a very good pass rusher. He could probably be a little bit better in the run. I think there's room for improvement there, but I like what he has been able to do. I think he's stout. I think he's durable. And I think he's everything you expected. And on top of that, from what I understand, and I'm not in the locker room, he's a good teammate, which is very important in free agency.
All right. So you got Malik Jackson. We'll give him a check mark for basically being what they hoped he would be up to this point. Let's get to Sean Gibson.
Yeah, and this grade here, I'm very happy with the type of player he is. I just don't think that he has been given the opportunities to really display his skill set. And I'm not saying that he hasn't been given the opportunity because of scheme or the way they're using him. I think it's just, look, when you got an offense that's turning the ball over and the opponent is playing you in a conservative fashion and you don't have a lead, they have no reason to be aggressive. They're not taking shots. They're not trying to force things. And typically a free safety, center fielder type is the one who ends up is the beneficiary of that, what I call front-running type of team. For example, if Tashaun Gibson was playing on the Peyton Manning team when they had Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney up front and they had a lead and the opponents were always having to play catch.
Quarterbacks are playing under duress second half.
Tashaun Gibson might have had 6, 7, 8 interceptions every year playing for that team.
Right.
The one thing that I think that he's made one mistake on a deep ball, which is, look, that happens. But I think he's been very solid in the open field tackling. I don't think I can remember one missed tackle, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't think of one missed tackle to where he's come up and the ball carrier has gotten by him and it was on him because it gained another 30 yards in the open field. I think he's been pretty secure.
So solid addition.
Very solid.
And definitely a piece that's in the mix for the Jags for the next however many years.
Yes. I mean,
part of the core.
Yeah, he cut Ebron. Forward. Was it Ebron this week that he took out his legs?
It was a great play.
And out there in the flat.
Here's
yeah.
why it was a great play. It was a bootleg, and Eric Ebron, I mean, he knifed his legs out. Poslesny, as good as he's been all year long, he's been fantastic. A little late in recognition on the bootleg, which is uncharacteristic of Paul Poslesny. Usually he's on it. And because he was late, Tashaun is really, really should be back. And in covering, there's another guy that was going to be going to the deep center field. But because Tashaun realized that Ebron was uncovered because Paul was a little late in recognition and that the ball was getting ready to come out, he literally breaks, and he breaks, I mean, like a bullet, and he knifes the legs out of Eric Ebron. I mean, that's the type of play you want. I don't want to say it's by the book, because by the book, it's probably stay back and play where you're supposed to be and then come up, react, and make a play once Eric Ebron turns up the field.
Just an instinctive play. He's been there.
The great safeties, the Ed Reeds, the Troy Polamalus, they play above what they call above the X's and O's.
They're
right?
Given the freedom to freelance a little bit because they had good instincts.
I like to call it educated decision making.
Fine.
And that was an educated decision made by Tashaun Gibson on that play, and a very impressive play.
All right, so two we're happy with. We'll stay on the defensive side, and we'll do the offensive guys coming up here in a minute. But Prince Mukamara, they signed him to a 1-year deal, so you know it's kind of a show-me contract mm-hmm. for them. What has he shown them?
He's shown me. I mean, he's shown me that he's beaten out Devon House. He's beaten out Aaron Colvin for that starting cornerback position, been very solid.
Is he a guy you'd like to see them try to
yes.
maintain or
yes.
keep on board? Yeah,
yeah. Because you know what? You got to have as many DB cornerbacks in this league as you can. And what I like about him, he's got length, he's got size, and he's got change of direction. Which, look, he's better than Devon House. I know Devon House came out after the game and said that, you know, I want to play more, and I guess that's kind of cool to do now since Senderic did it last
thing.
Week. Which, you know, my response to Senderic was, if you play better, then they're not going to keep you off the field, right? And my response to Devon House would be the same thing. I mean, if you play better and you're better than Amukamara, then you're going to play more.
Right.
Well, Sendarek, if you play better than Malik and if you play better than, you know, Avery or play better than Tyson, you're going to see the field more, you know. The thing I didn't like was last week. I said, well, you know, well, we need to get him more reps. Well, let his play determine that.
Right. All right, so three defensive guys, basically three hits for what they're looking for out of them, what their expectations were. We'll take a look at the offense when we come back in a moment, and we'll open up the phone lines to you at 641-1010 if you'd like to be a part of it. We'll get your calls in coming right out of the break with Jeff Logman here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony along with you as well, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Monday's injury list had 11 of the team's 53 players, including seven additions from Sunday's 26-19 loss to the Detroit Lions. The headliners were tight end Mercedes Lewis and left guard Patrick Omame, who were both placed on the season-ending injured reserve list. Now other injuries are cornerback Aaron Colvin and receiver special teams player Aurelius Ben. They both sustained concussions, plus tailback TJ Yeldon, defensive tackle Avery Jones, quarterback Blake Bortles with that right shoulder injury, and defensive end Jared Audrick. But don't worry, Jaguars fans. Coach Gus Bradley said Bortles is expected to play Sunday at Buffalo. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
All right, we continue along here. Jaguars Today live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Logman. We took a look at some of the defensive free agents the Jags acquired this year. We'll take a look at the offensive side coming up in just a bit, but let's get some phone calls in while we've got them at 641-1010 if you'd like to be a part of it on Jaguars Today this morning. We'll start with Daniel downtown to lead us off. Hi, Daniel. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing, gentlemen?
Doing well. What's up, man?
I was just wondering, if you guys were the head coach and run the offensive side of the ball or the coordinator, what would you do differently with the personnel and the play caller?
All right. Logs?
Great question. And I think a lot of people are saying, what would you do with the quarterback position? I'd leave Blake in there. You know, he's got to work through it. You know, what Chad Henne is, and I don't want to put a young, you know, rookie draft pick in there at this point in the season, because all that does is take away the opportunity to get better for everybody else. He's not ready to step in, and he's not ready to play. So let Blake stay in there, and you got to figure something out with him.
What does he need to do? Like, we don't know. You know, 6 weeks from now, you could have a new head coach. We don't know if we're going to have a new general manager or not, right? I mean, I think if Dave Caldwell is back, I think Blake's his guy. I do. That's my guess anyway. But what does he need to do over the final 6 weeks to convince us that he is the guy, or convince enough people that he is the guy?
Well,
what can
when,
he do?
When, okay. First and foremost, cut down on the interceptions, take care of the ball better. And I think most importantly is just the way that he operates the offense, his efficiency, his completion percentage. Look, I don't think we're going to see in the last 6 weeks all of a sudden the spiral tighten up.
Right.
I don't think we're going to see that. You know, so I think that that's something that, look, that's going to take an off season, you know, and maybe that doesn't even fix it. But, I mean, that's something that's an off season fix. You know, so I just want to see his completion percentage go up. I want to see him be safer with the football, make good decisions, which, you know, for the most part, he has been making good decisions in the last couple weeks. The decision against the Texans to throw the one and end up in a pick six, that was not a good decision. But besides that, the rest of the game, he was pretty solid. This past week, the decision to throw it to Marquise Lee, which resulted in a pick six, fine, there's nothing wrong with that throw, but it's got to be location.
Right, nothing
be
wrong with the decision to make that right. Throw, the execution.
The decision on I believe it was a 2nd and 15, and I showed this last night on Jaguars All Access. It was the first possession after they lost the lead in the fourth quarter. So first down you had, remember, it was a tackle for a -5, and it was a 2nd and 15. Julius doesn't even look back at the ball.
Right,
yeah.
But, you know, look, there's no excuse for the tight end not to be looking at the ball, even though he shouldn't get the ball because the linebacker was sitting there waiting, covering him. Bad decision by Blake Bortles there. He's got Denard Robinson in the flat for a gain of probably 30, maybe more. And so you make up for the fact that on 1st and 10 you had a tackle of -5,
right,
in which A.J. Cann, who, by the way, I said it earlier in the year, you need him to play better, did not play a very good game. He got whiffed on a block that he was very aggressive on, and there's no need to be aggressive on it. And that was disappointing. So with Blake, I mean, just continue to make good decisions, be safer with the football, get his completion percentage up, and find a way, because one of the great things that we loved about Blake early on was his ability to drop the ball in the bucket.
Right.
Where did that go?
It hasn't been there, along with the rest of his accuracy. And the deep stuff, the intermediate and the short stuff, he's just been off. But back to Daniel's original question then. All right, you're sticking with Blake Bortles over the final six games.
I'm making a change in my offensive line.
Okay, what are you doing?
Just off the top of my head. I mean, now that you got Amame's hurt, I'm taking A.J. Cann, I'm moving him to left guard, and I'm going to take Chris Reed, move him to right guard.
How come?
A.J., to me, played, 51 games at South Carolina as a left guard. I don't think he's played at the level that I'd expect him to play. He has been terrible, but he hasn't taken that next step. And your right guard, you'd like to have him be a real physical group. You know, so I'm going to take Chris Reed. He's a physical player. He's kind of tough. Got a little mean streak to him. I'm going to play him at right guard.
You think
it's
something they'll consider doing, or they want to?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard, you know. And the argument against that is, why would you take a player who's been playing all year long at right guard and all of a sudden change him up? Well, you're not winning. Might as well try something different.
And
you're
looking for more out of him based on what you're saying
I'm not getting what I wanted out of him. I'm going to take it. I'm going to move him to left guard.
And I think the other thing about trying to figure out what is and isn't working in this offense, I know for a lot of fans, they don't see the Mercedes loss as a big deal.
It's a big loss.
But it's a big loss for a team that was trying to recommit to being able to run the football. And now, anytime you go two tight ends, it looked like it was going to be Lewis and Koyak because they were a little bit better in the run game. Now it's Koyak and Julius Thomas, who just isn't giving you anything in the run game right now.
Well, if it's me, it's going to be Koyak and Neil Sterling.
Why? Understood why, but
I'm still going to
question why isn't Julius playing better? I guess.
Well, his blocking. I mean, his blocking is still not.
But
where
even
you
beyond
need it to
that,
be.
He looks kind of sluggish out there. Doesn't look quick. Doesn't look like he's running away from people.
Well, he's never been a quick guy, sudden guy. And I think the play that really disappointed me with him wasn't the one that he didn't look back. It was that third and four. I think is what they said it on the scoreboard, but it was actually like a third and five.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs up the field. It's a stick route. Turns around. He catches the ball, and he's short of the first down. Why they call it a stick route is that you run up the field, get to the sticks, pass the sticks, turn around, catch the ball. So when you catch the ball, you're already there at the first down.
Right.
And it's a great matchup. I mean, you got a defensive back, 35, who is Miles Killebrew.
Miles, a rookie. Who hasn't played much at all this year.
A rookie. I mean.
Who's known, Miles Killebrew is known for one thing. Being a big hitter. He's not known as a cover guy, by the way.
No. You like that matchup, Mike?
You would think.
I love it.
You would think your eyes would get wide if you saw that.
You love that matchup.
Yeah.
And Julius breaks the route off at 4.5, 5 yards, right at where he turns before he gets to the first down stripe. And, I mean, and that's unacceptable for a veteran guy.
Here's Gus. He was asked about this, Julius, and these short routes that he's been running.
You always try to run routes at the stick. Six, you know, so that you have an opportunity. At times, you saw we hit a back check down, and we got a first down off of that. It's more of a catch and run type. So there was a combination of those. You know, some routes you want to run past the sticks, and when you come back to the ball, you want to make sure you're at the down marker at the right place. So it was based on the route.
Quick thought on Koyak and what he's, you know.
He's doing a very good job.
Yeah?
He's doing a very good job. He's made great progress from last year to this year. And
it's kind of an afterthought in the offseason, you know.
Yeah, he was. You know,
he's earned his spot.
You know, when we were kind of trying to formulate the final roster, we didn't have him being a lock.
Right.
You know, and right now he's playing very well.
He does a little of everything
exactly.
Okay, right?
He's willing in every category, and he's able in every category. You know, I think whereas Julius, he's willing in most categories, and he's able in some categories.
Right. Not so much in the physical, just matchup man-on-man.
But you know, we talked about that last year. We talked about it in the offseason. You know, for this offense to take the next step and to get the best matchups, you know, Julius Thomas needs to become an effective blocker. Doesn't need to become a dominant blocker, but he needs to become an effective blocker so that you can get the best matchups that you could possibly want. You know, and that matchup that you had on Killebrew – I mean, for what it was, I mean, that's the greatest matchup in the world.
Right.
And he wasn't able to win. You know, okay. If you can't win that, what are you going to win? You know
not
what
much.
I mean?
And that's why his productivity has been as low
and
as
And that's
it has.
Why his play time has dropped
went right.
since they made the change in offensive coordinators.
I mean, it didn't sneak past anybody. Marseilles Lewis is in there getting balls thrown
nope.
to him right off the bat.
Nope.
You know, and, you know, it was Koyak the week before, and that's where we're at right now. Let's get to Mike on the south side. Next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Mike.
How's it going?
Hey, going well. How are you?
I'm all right. I'd really like to see Gus stick around here. I think that you know, he's doing a good job. I think, you know, he's built that defense pretty good. And I just think moving forward, we'd be better off with him already figuring out the mistakes and the different players and what they're good at and what they're not good at, rather than have a whole new crew come in here and have to figure out all the stuff that, you know, he's been figuring out. And I don't know. I just think...
That's fine. No, we appreciate you sharing that opinion. I mean, you don't hear that much these days,
no.
to be honest with you. But here's a guy who says, you know, in the comments he told Tyler, he feels like the team has gotten better, but just the record hasn't reflected it. They haven't shown it. I think the personnel has gotten better. The defense certainly is considerably better. You can't blame Gus for everything that happened. You can't look. People said, shouldn't the coaches be telling these guys not to jump off sides? As I told Tony, hey Tony, do I need to tell you to put your right foot in front of your left when you walk in the car after
Hopefully
the
not.
Show? That's as rudimentary as it comes. If anyone should be telling anybody, it's Derek Marks, who's as senior as anybody.
How do you think Derek felt? I mean,
stupid.
I mean,
I hope
the week that you make comments.
Yeah.
You know, about, look, you know, I should be playing more and I want to play more. And then you do that.
The ball's right there. I mean, he's staring at the ball where he's lining up. I mean, it's just, it's insane.
Oof. Bottom line, going back to Mike, what Mike says about Gus, I just, at this point, I think it'd take a miracle. You know, he's 14 and 44. And that's the bottom line. And I'm not saying every single thing has been Gus's fault, but he is ultimately, the buck does stop with the head coach. When you compile that kind of record, it's likely that the owner is going to change.
So, the buck stops with those that are in charge.
Yeah, and that Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley. I mean, that's a combo. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. But we appreciate the call, Mike. Thank you for that. I'm sure Gus appreciates that as well. Let me see if I can get Alex and Mandarin in real quick before we break. Alex, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
How are we doing this morning, guys?
Doing well. What's up, man?
I was just thinking, like, dream scenario, obviously not with Caldwell up in GM, but, you know, we get Romo from Dallas, Tom Coughlin wants to come back in the league, and then we go aggressive in the first round and get, like, a Fournette or a Dalvin Cook. Could we see Super Bowl within the next 2-3 years?
How many of them you want? Two, three of them in the next few years. Why not, man? I mean, you can dream. Look, we've committed to not – you know, laying out all the parameters and possibilities. We're aware of the names that are going to be out there if Gus Bradley loses his job. And trust us, we're prepared to discuss them in depth. I do put it this way, Jeff. I do think there is a chance. You got to get better quarterback play. There's no question about that, right?
Without a doubt.
No, so if you don't get better quarterback play, whether it's out of Blake Bortles or out of another quarterback who's brought into be given the job in the case of a guy like Tony Romo's not coming here to compete, I don't think, or whether it's through competition, you get a Mike Glennon on your roster, whatever the case. If you get better quarterback play, this defense continues to make strides. They could be a top five defense next year. You get the right guy in, you get one or two key pieces. I do think this team could make a big jump forward.
Significant jump.
I'm not trying to sell sunshine and rainbows. I get it. We thought that jump might have been coming this year. Okay, so it's quite possible the Jags stay in a rut, and I'm not trying to sell season tickets here or anything like that, but I do think, I truly believe that if you had more steady quarterback play just this year, we've talked about it many times, if you had a guy like Trevor Siemian, right, he's not doing anything special, but he's not a turnover machine, right? He's fairly accurate when given time.
Record is at, you know what, 10 games in, 5-5, 6-4, somewhere in
something like that. That's what you'd be right now with that level of quarterback
and
play
the hunt
and nothing
for the
else.
Division.
And nothing else, right? And nothing else. So if you can get the quarterback position fixed That's a big if. I mean, that's a big if. A lot of teams search for years and years and years to try to fix that position. I do think, you know, whether it's that exact combination of coaching and personnel coming on board or whatever, I do think that the Jags could be contending.
And you're the same belief to me is that, look, let me say what I said. I don't think you just throw Blake Bortles out and then give up. I don't. I think that, you know, look, we saw what we saw last year.
Right.
We've seen what we've seen with him. We know that he can make some big plays. But you need to start to see that again in order to say, okay, we feel good about him. But right now you're not feeling good about him. But you know that he's capable. So I think you guys agree. We're not ready to take Blake Bortles and get rid of him.
Not at this point.
No.
But I'll say this. If he continues to play and show the same lack of overall accuracy that he has over the final six games.
Yeah.
I'm also not just going to sit there and say
we're not going to
Blake Bortles. You're,
stand
you're the incumbent.
Yeah,
no, you bring in
be the anointed one.
Yeah,
and then it's your job, and you know, here
right.
We go.
And now this is it's make or break time as
That's
far
right.
as that goes. And could he be in the mix for that? Absolutely. But at the same time, you know, if you get to the off season and you want to, if you could, let's say. Tony Romo wanted to come to Jacksonville. This is number one destination. I don't think Tony Romo comes in here unless you're signing him or trading for him to be the starting quarterback. He's at that stage
yes.
in his career. He's going somewhere to start for the next couple of years, hopefully make a deep run into the postseason. So it's that would not be an open competition type scenario. Anyway, we got to take a timeout here. When we return, we got This State in Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL, more of your calls, tweets, texts, you name it, with Jeff Loggeman here answering all of your questions on Jaguar football. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony as well, along live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, This Date in Football History.
All right, This Date in Football History, presented all week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. When I was a kid, my favorite player was Kellen Winslow Sr. And in 1981, on this date, November 22nd, the San Diego tight end tied an NFL record with 5 touchdown catches in the Chargers' 55-21 victory over Oakland. He tied the record of a guy named Bob Shaw, who did it for the Chicago Cardinals versus the Baltimore Colts back in 1950. Since then, only one player has matched that. Any guesses on who that would be? Since 1981. Any guesses? The most prolific receiver in NFL history.
Randy Moss.
Jerry Rice did it in 1990 against the Atlanta Falcons for the San Francisco 49ers. So only 3 guys have caught 5 touchdowns in a game, and Kellen Winslow did it on this date. Birthdays for this date, former Jaguar Anthony Maddox turns 38 years old, spent a couple of years
small
with
school
the team.
draft pick, defensive tackle.
That is correct. He was born in the state in 1978. Hey, Brock Osweiler, hope you enjoyed Monday Night Football. Hope you don't get any Montezuma's Revenge for your birthday today. 26 years old for Brock Osweiler. They called him 6'8 last night. I know he thought he was 6'7. Either way, you can see why it's so
That's
tough.
That's what they missed him at.
It's 6'8"?
Yeah.
Yeah. When guys get in his general vicinity, he's got so many angles and moving parts to all get going in the right direction. I think it's very difficult for guys that big to be consistently successful.
Doesn't he look clumsy when he runs?
He does.
Oh, yeah.
He looks goofy. also born in this day. Man, just a bad luck week, I guess. Gio Bernard celebrates his 25th birthday today by facing a long and arduous recovery from a torn ACL that he suffered against the Buffalo Bills this week. So the Bills cost since it, well, A.J. Green tore his hamstring against him, and then
first
Gio
play
Bernard.
Of the game.
Right. And it was on the cart. You knew it was bad. He was on the cart. For the hamstring. He may be back in a few weeks. Gio Bernard done for the year. And so are the Cincinnati Bengals, for that matter, going nowhere fast in the AFC North. This date in football presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, conveniently located on Gate Parkway. They're a certified Invisalign provider. If you've got a snore in the family, maybe it's you, check out the Custom Fit Somnomed mouth guard, and it can help alleviate those snoring issues. Call 620-9225 for Dr. McCall's office, 620-9225, or visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That was this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Real quick, a final note on this date in football history. It was on this date 4 years ago that Mark Sanchez ran up the back of one of his own linemen on Thanksgiving night. The butt fumble.
If I had had that privy, I definitely would have included it.
It is 4 years old today. The Oakland Raiders held on last
never
night.
Never live that down.
Oh, it was
amazing. I don't think anything makes Tony smile more than
every time
up
I see it.
Fumble.
It makes me laugh.
Ernest Biner is always going to be remembered for the fumble.
Sure.
Yeah.
And
Mark Sanchez will always be known for the butt fumble.
It was on SportsCenter every Friday for a year and a half.
For a guy who at one point was tied for the all-time NFL mark for the most road playoff victories ever. He's known for the butt fumble.
Butt fumble.
Yeah.
The Raiders held on to win last night against Houston in Mexico City, 27-20. DeAndre Hopkins had what looked like a touchdown taken away on an early whistle last night. Houston quarterback Brock Osweiler complained after the game about a green laser that would be shined in his eyes from somewhere in the stands throughout the game. There were a couple of controversial spots late in the game that both went against the Texans. All that adds up to the Raiders improving to 8-2 and winning their fourth game in a row. For Oakland, it is their first four-game winning streak since their Super Bowl season in 2002. Indianapolis quarterback Andrew Luck has been placed in the NFL's concussion protocol. He is unlikely to play in the Colts' Thanksgiving night game against the Pittsburgh Steelers because of it. Scott Tolzien would get the start if Luck indeed can't give it a go. Chicago quarterback Jay Cutler is having a shoulder injury that he suffered on Sunday evaluated. He could be out for the rest of the season, potentially leading many to speculate that Cutler could have played his final game in a Bears uniform. And finally, the Minnesota Vikings are optimistic about the return of running back Adrian Peterson. Peterson underwent surgery to repair a torn meniscus in his knee on September 22nd. He is reportedly making very good progress in his rehab. No one's shocked about that at all. There's still no definite timetable for his return, but reports indicate that AP could be back on the field for the Vikings before the end of the regular season next month.
All right. I'm guessing you may have seen that butt fumble anniversary note from Irish Jaguar. I don't know if you did or not, but he tweeted out fourth anniversary of the butt fumble. And also, here's the Jaguars' record on this day going back over the last 5 years. Of course, they're 2-8 right now. Little did you know how good you had it last year, Jag fans, when you were 4-6. What a high watermark that was. The three previous seasons, 2012, 2013, 2014, each year, 1-9. That's where you stood on this day. 10 games in the season, and your guts are ripped out. You've got nothing to really realistically look forward to as a Jaguar fan in terms of, you know, the playoff chase or being anywhere close to competitive in that regard. You turn your attention to the draft and those kind of things, and that's just a telling statistic.
Not a good place to be.
It's a bad place to be. All right, let's get back to some of these free agents, Jeff. We did some of the guys on the defensive side of the football. Let's start on offense with Chris Ivory. In terms of what they'd hoped and expected to get out of him, where is he?
Well, I don't think he's exactly where, you know, you wanted him to be. I mean, you were hoping Chris Ivory would be just as productive here as he was with the Jets last year. But, you know, we also have to factor in that he had an undisclosed injury earlier in the year that we don't know exactly what that was, and it kept him out for multiple weeks. You know, so how did that impact him? How did the quarterback's inability to convert third downs hurt him also in subsequent situations? You know, so I would say disappointed right now. I mean, with the obvious, because, you know, at the end of the day, you can't factor in any factors except for the results, and the results haven't been where you've expected them to be. But it's got an asterisk next to it.
Is this a guy that you envision being a priority to keep around? I mean, obviously, he's under contract.
Yeah, he's under contract. I'm not letting him go anywhere.
Okay.
I'm not letting him go anywhere. But, you know, I will tell you, for the running back position as a whole, you know, Denard Robinson, Corey Grant, you know, these are two guys that, you know, I think that, you know, in the future, you need to try to replace them and replace them with top-end talent. You know, I believe that.
Oh, that Denard had a good game this
week. Yeah, he had a good game. You know, special teams, he's okay. But, I mean, when he's not even in the thought process of the rotation of the running back, you got to look to replace somebody.
I don't want to get draft talky here, but just in terms of, you know, somebody brought up earlier a Leonard Fournette or a Dalvin Cook, if whether it's the first round or somewhere else, if you have a chance to get, because guys, we know runners can become stars from many rounds of the draft. Undrafted guys become stars at this position. David Johnson was a third-round pick, right? He's one of the best in the league right now. So you may have a guy in the third round staring at you that you think has mm-hmm. that kind of potential. Is this – so, I mean, is there enough juice, I guess, in these two Jaguar backs? You don't really have the long speed guy.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I want. And I think that that's what you got to have somebody at that position that can be a threat to go to the house. You know, T.J. Yeldon's not a fast guy. I mean, Chris Ivory's a power back. He's not a fast guy. Once he gets to the open field, he's not going to run away from people. I want somebody that's going to run away from people. You know, I'm not saying that I need a guy that's going to be, you know, the workhorse Ezekiel Elliott. That'd be great. You know, it'd be great. But I'm saying give me somebody who is going to contend for play time because he has, like we talk about with Marquise, he has that X button. You know, that when he gets it, he's a threat. And the backfield right now is not a threat, and I would definitely be looking to upgrade it.
Now, this is the most interesting one to me. I'm really curious on your opinion because you watch the film and you have a much better feel for this, I'm sure, than Tony and I do. Kelvin Beachum, right? He's on a deal where the Jags have a team option for 4 years, $40 million. Is he worth picking up that option?
I'm picking up the option.
You are.
I'm picking up the option, but I will say this about Kelvin Beachum. I am happy that he has been able to play and to play without any concern. You know, is he going to be available next week or whatever? For him to come back from the knee injury and to play as much as he has, I think is a credit to him. To be able to work through the rehab process, to work through some of the aches and pains that you have coming back from an ACL reconstruction. But that doesn't mean the level that he's playing at right now is good enough, because it's not. It needs to be better. He needs to be more strong in the run game, and I think that he can be better in pass protection than what he's been.
Do you think that comes with another year further removed?
I do. I believe that next year, having had a full offseason to allow that knee more time to get all of his strength back, to get his conditioning level back up, to get rid of, you know, tendonitis issues that you may have in a knee, which you get with an ACL reconstruction because of they take that patellar tendon out to use that as your substitute ACL. That was one thing that I fought through, and it was very difficult. And the next year, it was like, okay, it's back to normal. And I think next year will be one of those moments for Beachum where he is back to normal. But, you know, 4 years, $40 million, right, is the option.
Mm-hmm.
$10 million for, a really good left tackle.
Oh, it's not right. It's not spending too much money in the position. I just wanted to know if you felt like it was worth it, and you do.
Yes.
Nortman's been an excellent
excellent acquisition, and his net has suffered because of the coverage. But now I will say the last two games, his punting has not been where it needs to be.
And then Mackenzie Bernadeau is a miss, but, I mean, I think he was brought in to be, you know, a depth kind of, you know, push for, in a competition. It wasn't
it's
high-priority signing.
You got to have guys like that because the competition makes everybody better, and I think he made everybody better. I think if he doesn't come onto the roster, I mean, do you have Omame playing where he was at? Do you have Chris Reed playing where he was at? Probably not. Competition makes everybody better. If it costs you a little bit of money that's signing bonuses that's going to be lost in the end of the day, fine.
Overall, that's a lot of hits, you feel like.
They've hit pretty
free agent
good,
class, yeah.
The biggest disappointment, Mike, has been the draft picks that have been here and taking the next steps.
From previous year's draft picks, you're saying?
I mean, Luke Jokel hasn't really taken that next step, but the injury obviously was a significant part of that. Blake Bortles hasn't taken the next step where we really thought that he would, and because he hasn't taken the next step, I think all of your other draft picks at the skill positions, the wide receiver position, with the exception of Marquise Lee.
He's taken a step forward. Robinson and Hearns kind of took one last year, but they're, you know, those guys are kind of stagnated a little bit because of the inconsistency of QB.
It's hard.
I got it.
I will say, you know, when we had a question earlier about what would you do, you know, I think it's time for Marquise Lee to be a number two, you know, in this offense.
All right, we'll talk about that when we come back, like what you're seeing out of him. Two terrific toe-tapping grabs back-to-back that resulted in a touchdown for the Jacksonville Jaguars this week. Hold that thought. He's Jeff Logman. along with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. More calls on the line, so we'll get to you when we come back in just a moment at 641-1010. Jaguars Today rolls on live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Indeed, more with Jeff Logman. We've got a good question on the text line we're going to get to here in a second that wants you to give kind of a power ranking on the O-line, including injured guys. In other words, who are the top seven was the request. So we'll let you think on that for a second, Jeff. But we've got John on the line on the south side. So let's get him in here quickly, and we'll get to the offensive line power ranking through 10 games for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing well.
Yeah, first thing, whoever put David Carr 100 and Bortles number 50 on the top 100 need to get slapped and banned from doing that. Second of all, I want to go back to the philosophy thing and the culture thing. And it's like, I guess Gus Bradley didn't realize or was naive to the fact that when you bring better talent and better players, they're not going to put up with the losing and your culture of losing that you're not dealing with Ace Sanders and Cecil Shorts of the world, you know, and Jordan Todman and Derek Cox or whoever the guy Cox was and these other kind of scrub players. You're dealing with better players now. So if you're going to keep the culture of just getting better, see, Oakland was 0-10 at some point. Last year they were 7-9. This year they're 8-2. They went from getting better to win now. Gus didn't change his culture from getting better. He kept it as getting better. And he never pushed Bortles to improve to the point where he's more vigorous in his improvement. He just looked at it as getting better instead of winning now. And I just wanted you to take my comments off there.
All right, what do you think?
I don't have any problem with your opinion. I mean, it's your opinion, and is it right or is it wrong? I don't know. You know, but I think it's an interesting opinion.
I have a feeling, in my opinion is, having gotten to know Gus a little bit over the last several years, that if they were 8-2 right now, he would still be stressing the same things.
He would not change one bit.
He would be talking about getting better and how do we improve, because he thinks, and obviously the results haven't shown here, but he thinks philosophically that you focus on the steps it takes to improve. You don't focus on the end result, and because those steps are what's necessary to reach the end result. And so, again, like you said, 8-2, he'd be the same guy. He's still saying the same things. Clearly, it hasn't worked. They haven't won.
No, but it's interesting, Mike, that you talk about that. And that's the one thing, though, that I give Gus, you know, credit as a man for, is that he hasn't changed one bit. You know, he hasn't changed with us. He hasn't changed in his press conferences with the media. You know, he has a belief in what he's doing and how he's doing it. And right now, you can't see that it is working in the results that are the most important to the fan base and to everybody else, which is the wins and losses.
Yep.
But, you know, I give him credit. That's his belief. That's the way he wants to coach, and he has not changed, and he has not been deterred from it one bit.
And you know, and from John's point of view, that's not a positive in Gus's
maybe
category.
It's not.
And you're right. You certainly welcome to that opinion. It's hard to deny that the results have not been there. All right, offensive line ranking, top seven.
It's an interesting question.
I'm guessing Linder's one.
Absolutely.
And I'm guessing
it's not even a debate.
Okay, I'm guessing Beecham's two, but maybe I'm wrong.
Not a debate from me because he's the left tackle. He is going to protect the blind side of a quarterback. Excellent feet. Yes, he is my number two.
Okay, so now all bets are off, I think.
Now it's like,
This is going to be interesting, right? So these are your remaining top five offensive linemen, including guys who may have been lost to the season-ending injury, like Luke Jokel, Patrick Amame. Who do you have? Who's number three?
Yeah, this is hard.
I know. Want to start at seven and work your way up to three? You can do whatever you like.
No, because, I mean, I think once you get past three, then I think the rest of them are all take your pick.
Okay.
But three is an interesting one because, you know what? Your reaction is three, you got to go with a tackle, okay? But if you go with Jeremy Parnell, hasn't played where you've wanted him to play at this year, would like him to be a little bit better, but he's done a good job in some pass protection with the exception of D. Ford. You know, or do you say, Could Luke Joeckel be better than Parnell at right tackle? Or do you say, well, you know what? We got a guard that's better than any tackle.
If you had next year, assuming Luke Joeckel is 100% healthy, right, mm-hmm. able to come back rehab.
I'd let him compete for the right tackle spot.
For 1 year, if you had a choice between Joeckel and Parnell for one season, who do you think will be the more effective player next year?
At right tackle.
Sure, if that's how you want to judge it.
That's a great question.
It's tough.
Yeah.
In your mind.
Yeah, it is tough.
What are they going to try to re-sign Luke Joeckel? Is he a priority?
No.
To bring him back? You don't think?
Well, I mean, you're not going to. I think somebody else will pay him, you know, because of where they viewed him at. You know, just like we talked about going all the way back to Blaine Gabbert. People are like, nobody's going to give up a six-pack for him. And I said at that time, you're going to get something for him, because what personnel guys do is they refer back to what they wrote on those, you know, draft picks.
And if they liked him at the time, they think, hey, once we get him under our coaching,
yeah, oh yeah, we can coach him up,
get that out of him.
So,
all right, so let's say you put Joeckel third. Okay, Parnell, that makes him number four.
Yeah,
because it was that close between the two of them,
which says something about your guards.
All interchangeable.
Yeah,
nothing special.
No. No, I mean, I like that's why I was saying AJ can put him at left, because you know what? He hasn't been anything special at right guard. Well, he had 50-something snaps at South Carolina, moved him to left guard. Let's see if he can take that next step at left guard. And then at right guard, you know, I love Patrick Omame. And the reason I love Patrick Omame, and you could debate whether Patrick Omame would be four, is that he has the ability to play tackle. You know, is that a valuable depth guy?
Seems like it would be.
Yeah, you know, but I've always, you know, preseason, you heard me talking about Chris Reed. I like the way Chris Reed played. You know what, Chris Reed, when he came in the game this past week with the injury, he played very well, very well. And I want to say it was, you know, elite level or anything like that, but he played very solid.
Where's your priority in trying to make this line better going into the offseason? You know, Linder is locked in. You think Beecham will have his option picked up. That locks him in as your left tackle. The rest of it up for grabs? Or do you think that one of these young guys, maybe you'll see Chris Reed over the last six games and you feel like, all right, he's one of our guards, AJ can. Or is it, you know, you have those guys, Omame comes back, it's open competition. Are you trying to add more interior linemen? Are you looking for a guy to push Parnell out or, you know, compete with him at right tackle?
I'm looking at competition everywhere. The reality is you're not going to do any better than Brandon Linder, and you're not going to be able to find competition to compete with Kelvin Beecham.
You're not going to try to if you pick up his option, because
that's right.
you're committing to him.
Well,
if you're picking up that contract, you're committing to him being your left tackle.
That's right.
And at least for the first year, you're not looking to push him.
I mean, in a perfect world, you know, and this is obviously very rare, but I mean, a perfect world, you pick up a left tackle in the seventh round and all of a sudden he's really good.
Oh, right, right, right.
You know, but it just doesn't happen.
Lyle Collins doesn't happen very often.
No. So, you know, hey, look, the reality is that I want to get competition amongst everybody. I think you got enough good players in the inside of the guard positions to provide competition from within. I think it will be very difficult to keep Luke Joeckel, because I think somebody else will be willing to pay him more probably than you will, because of their, you know, their evaluation. And Luke Joeckel, you know, I would be – I don't want to say he wants to leave, but at the same token, when your left tackle job has, for the most part this year, was given to or earned by Kelvin Beecham, however you want to state it, you know, you're probably going to go somewhere else to get an opportunity to get back at left tackle. That's what he's played his whole life, and I understand that completely. But if you were able to keep him, I would say we're gonna let you compete at right tackle. And let's go. Let's see what happens.
If wherever the Jags draft, right? And again, I'm not trying to get into specific players. Just I'm thinking more along the lines of, you know what the key positions are. If you had a great player, take quarterback out. Okay, great player available at any other position. What position would you like to see them try to
at any
bring
position?
At any position other than quarterback.
Other than quarterback. So I could take, you know, so you were talking like the Jalen Ramsey of any position
the
next
best,
to the draft.
The best available
what
at position any
position.
And they're all kind of equally great. Like you expect them to all be equally great at what they do. Is it a defensive end, or do you like the future of Fowler and Ngakoue enough that you think that the priority should be elsewhere? I mean, what would be the focus for you?
I'd take a defensive end.
You
like
would?
Like a true defensive end. You know, a 6'5", you know, 6'4", 6'5".
270 pounds.
275,
right.
280 pounds.
The guy, the traditional 4'3 end.
Yep.
That you're looking at. This is a question from Demetrius at Have the Compass on Twitter. He sent this in early in the program. Has the big end position hindered this team's ability to consistently rush the passer, in your opinion?
Well, is the 4B?
Yeah.
The design of it?
I guess so, and what they've gotten out of it, the combination of the two.
I'm not a big fan of the 4B. You know, I think it's very – I mean, and the reason why, it does provide an advantage to stop in the run, but it's also very difficult to rush the passer from the 4B. But if you actually look at the percentage of snaps that you're actually in 4B, it's not that high. You know, so you can't say that the 4B is wrong by design because, like I said, the snaps aren't there to say it's a big deal. But I will say you don't want to pay $8 million a year for a 4B.
Which is what you're doing now. Right.
Yeah. Unless the 4B is a guy that can get you three or four sacks from the 4B, and then on nickel, he kicks inside and gives you three or four sacks from the inside.
So if you're designing, if Jeff Logman's in charge of the defensive line, okay, and you're playing more of a traditional 4-3, you're looking for that guy. Like, if you found that, let's say Myles Garrett, right, fell in the Jags' lap. He's best pass rusher in the draft, okay? He seems like, to
How
me.
How big is he?
What does he go, Tony? What's he
I don't
listed
know. Let me look
I
want to
say right in the range that we're talking about here. Let's say he's a traditional right defensive end. You know, your cornerstone.
6'5", 262 he's listed.
So he's a little light, but that's your right end. That's right.
He would be my left end.
He would be your left end.
And I would not be playing a 4B.
Right.
He would be an outside shade, and I would have, you know, Ngakoue and Dante Fowler playing that outside position, and I would also cross-train those guys also to learn some auto.
Okay.
They would be able to multitask.
Sounds like, not many teams run that 4B, that big end position, do they?
Some do. I mean, in a defense that most people would consider a 4-3, not a lot. But in teams that run a 3-4 and they're kicking that defensive tackle defensive end, there's quite a few of them that play that 4B type. So,
but in a 3-4 base.
Yeah, but it's not a true – I mean, very few teams play the traditional 3-4.
This comes up, though. We get this question quite a bit. Would Dante Fowler be better suited as an outside linebacker? Do you have the personnel, or at least the – framework.
Could you
here.
Play a 3-4?
Could you play a 3-4 with what they've got?
Yes.
Yeah? Do you think it might be better off? I mean, Paul Posluszny's having a pretty good year, right?
Yes.
I mean, maybe you could have Posluszny and Jack both on the inside with Fowler on the outside, opposite Telvin on the outside, right? And you've got guys like Aluwalu who are you look at him, you're like, that's a 3-4 end.
You got to remember something now. I mean, if you run a 3-4, you're still facing the same decisions for the most part that you would be facing of how to get Miles Jack integrated into the defense as you are now. Because Telvin Smith would not be a true outside backer in a 3-4. Telvin Smith would still be considered an inside backer in a 3-4. So you would still have Paws, Telvin, and Miles Jack all working.
Three guys for two spots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it could be because the outside spots would be more of a
Dante more of a, like,
Fowler
and
Ngakoue.
Ngakoue kind of combo.
Right.
Right. All right. Well, still, I mean, something to consider. We don't know what the direction of the coaching staff may take.
Look, I think that right now they're doing a very good job of working Dante Fowler into the mix with Ngakoue, and I think they're doing a very good job working Miles Jack onto the field, and I think that he's getting better.
All right, we got a few more on the phone lines that we'll get to when we come back in a moment, and a few more on social media as well for Jeff Logman to Check the Tape Tuesday. I think it's the first time we referenced that descriptive term, but that's what it is every Tuesday with Logs with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Bills coach Rex Ryan has found a way to talk up a game between his 5-5 team and the 2-8 Jaguars. He spoke to Nick Veronica of the Buffalo News and said, "That's the best two-win team I've ever seen." And that's the truth. I don't get it. Statistically, they're the 7th-rated defense in the league in yards per game. They're ranked higher than we are on defense. Their offense is 21st in the league, but now they're all healthy outside, and they got three guys that can really play. Ryan also pointed out that his team is only 3 wins better than the rebuilding Jaguars, so they have no right to discredit anybody. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
All right, appreciate the folks at Crockett Law, PL Real Estate Law, bring you the Tuesday Jaguars Today with logs every week right here. Check the tape Tuesday. We're going to go to the phones quickly. We're going to hear Rex Ryan comment on playing the 2-8 Jacksonville Jaguars that will live in infamy around here for a while. And we'll get a few more questions in and submitted on social media for Jeff Logman. Kevin on the south side next up, though, on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, good morning. How y'all doing, man? Hey,
doing well, man.
I actually agree with Rex Ryan, man. I mean, you know, not because I'm a homer, but I just think he's right. But here was my question. I just sat here and thought of 7 quarterbacks that has been drafted after Blake Bortles. And that's not just counting the ones from this year, but the one, a couple from last year. Isn't it at a point now that you don't get 4 years to prove that you got it? I mean, at this point, this 2.5 years, and I mean, if we listen to what you guys said earlier, and I agree with you guys, if we hit with the free agents, if, you know, the other players are playing good, the only place we're hurting that is at quarterback position. I mean, it was horrible this year. I mean, we can blame a lot of other people, but, I mean, the quarterback position has been horrible. So, I mean, why is it that it's like we're afraid to say, you know, maybe they got it wrong and, you know, move on? So I just kind of wanted your thought process on that.
Sure, Kevin. Appreciate the call. Look, I think we're open to the fact that they could have, or the possibility that they could have gotten it wrong. That's why we want to let's see these next 6 games play out. And if Blake continues along this path, I agree he's been the most culpable single player. And that's, you could say that about the quarterback on most teams. But
yes. Yeah, that goes without saying.
But there's no other position, Jeff, that if we had, as we said, if we had just had league average play at the position, could have impacted this one loss record significantly the way that one would have. I think it's
I put a big chunk of that on coaching with the lack of the effectiveness of the running game early on. You know, if the quarterback plays better and the running game has more of a concerted effort in it to where they're calling it, sticking with it more, I think that would have helped.
But you know what, though, on that point, they can run the ball last year. They had an occasional game here or there where, you know, Denard would go for 100.
Enough.
Not that much, though, throughout the course of the year. So, that to me, that aspect hasn't changed all that much. And Blake was able to still have some success, you know, yardage and touchdown-wise. Yeah, he had a lot of interceptions. But so, to me, it wasn't a major step back in the run game. They've had the 200-yard game against Kansas City. The backs had 100 against Indy. And, you know, they didn't run it well this week, but Chris Ivory was an effective player catching the ball.
I thought it was an effect. But here's the problem. Here's the biggest concern that I have with Blake Bortles is, one is, first of all, turning the ball over. But also, secondly, is to go back to Nathaniel Hackett's comments last week prior to the game, and in his weekly press conference, he talked about how third down is a quarterback's down. And it is. You know, when you talk to the great quarterbacks that have played the game and you talk to them now, and they always said that, look, my job as a quarterback is to convert third downs and continue to move the chains, give your team an opportunity. And, yeah, it's complete the big plays, protect the ball and all that kind of stuff. But third down is critical. I mean, that is a quarterback's down. Nathaniel Hackett is dead on the money. If you look at Blake's rating on third down right now, that's been his area of trouble. I mean, he's a
49.2,
which is 29th in the National Football League. And if you look at the ranking sheet, I don't think there's anybody below 29th. I mean, it's way down there. And with the ball, where we've seen there's some accuracy issues. But, you know, the one thing is, look, I like some of the decisions. And I think he's making, for the most part, good decisions. But the accuracy and the flutter of the ball and the ability to have success on third down, that's concerning. And I think that if you go into or finish out this year and you say, and let's say the season ended right now. If the season ended right now and you go into the offseason saying, okay, we're okay at quarterback, I think you're making a big mistake. I think you have to go into it as, look, we don't know. Okay, we don't know. So we better do something in case when we do know, it's not the news that we want, which is that Blake Bortles is going to get better and be a franchise-type guy. You got to be prepared.
Kevin, we appreciate the call. The Rex Ryan quote we're alluding to, let's play this now. Rex has asked about the Jaguars game and with the Raiders game in mind next week, how does he make sure his guys are not looking ahead?
Rex, with how the schedule is lining up right now, you guys obviously have Jacksonville this week and Oakland afterwards. As you're now going to start preparing for Jacksonville, how do you make sure the guys in the locker room don't overlook them? I mean, you got to respect everybody in this league, but just going off the records, Jacksonville is a little bit behind.
That's the best two-win team I've ever seen, and that's the truth. I don't get it. I mean, statistically, they're the seventh-rated defense in the league. So they're ranked higher than we are on defense. Their offense is 21st in the league. But now you got, they're healthy outside. They got three guys that can really play. I mean, they have way more top 100 players than we did last year. Looking at all that stuff, I thought it was a Jacksonville show. You got a franchise quarterback. That's what they all tell me. You got Chris Ivory at running back, who's a great back. I had him with the Jets. I know all about him. He's a handful. Then you got, Hearns, Robinson, and Lee is really playing well. That might have been the best game Lee's ever had. So they definitely have those type of weapons on offense. And then they got a big offensive line, physical offensive line. And then on defense, like I say, they're seventh in the league. So it's, with a lot of talent. So to think we're going to overlook them, there's no chance. I mean, I don't understand it necessarily. I think it comes down probably to their turnover. I think they're at minus 15 maybe or something like that. And I think that contributes to their record probably more than anything else. But this is a dangerous football team.
You think minus 15 contributes to it?
That is it.
Well, then there's this glaring minus 15. A couple of things there, what Rex said. A, when he goes, I thought I was watching the Jacksonville Jaguars show with the NFL Network's top 100 rankings. Tony and I said at the time, this is people are way too bullish on these rankings. In fact, we were shocked. Once Derek Carr was announced as player 100, we were shocked that Blake showed up in the top 100 because the perception you hear nationwide, well before this bad season had started, was that Carr was ahead in his development because he was more efficient. Didn't turn it over as much, almost as productive on the high end with the touchdown. So that was surprising. And then, as Rex says, they got a franchise quarterback. At least that's what everybody tells me.
Franchise quarterback. That's what they all tell me.
Well, that's Rex deflecting to they, right? Whoever they all declared Blake to be the franchise quarterback. Maybe he's talking about us. I don't know. But I think if he sat down and evaluated it, he would tell you right now, at best, you don't know. If he's a franchise quarterback, I mean, he's got right now, Tyrod Taylor playing at a much higher level at the moment.
And Tyrod Taylor's not a franchise quarterback.
Right. But he is, if you put Tyrod Taylor on this team this year, Jeff, I think they're a 6-4 team right now. I do.
Maybe.
That's me. I think he's accurate enough. He can extend plays like Blake, maybe even better than Blake to that regard. He protects the ball for the most part. What do you see? Have you been able to watch much Buffalo on film yet?
Yeah, I've watched two games. I watched their last game that they played against Cincinnati and then watched the game before they had the bye, which was Seattle. And I think that's the one you kind of want to watch more than anything just because it's Seattle's defense and maybe there's a little bit of carryover for what you'll see this Sunday against the Jaguars defensively. In a very unconventional offense, this is like going back and playing a college football team. Because of the way that Anthony Lynn, the new offensive coordinator, who replaced, I think it was Greg Roman, earlier in the year. I mean, this is college football. Read option pass, sprint outs. I mean, everything that you could do and really have no fear about the quarterback getting hurt, which is how colleges run the game.
Right.
That's what they're doing in Buffalo. And And it's kind of hard because when it's hard because you don't face it week in and week out when you're a defense in the NFL. You might see little glimpses of it here and there, plays here and there. But, I mean, through and through, this is a very, very different offense. And I think it's a very unpredictable offense because the quarterback is so mobile. You know, when he rolls out, is he going to run, number one, or is he going to throw it? And when he's in the pocket, is he going to be accurate and throw the ball deep because he's got some capable guys? Woods on the outside is a very good player. Or is he going to run it and cut it up the middle? You know, so there's so many different things to defend when you have the quarterback as a running option. If Tyrod Taylor were in Chip Kelly's, you know, offense to where the quarterback is always a running threat, it'd be a great fit. Well, that's exactly what the Buffalo Bills are really doing with Tyrod Taylor. And their offensive line, I was talking to Tony not long ago, a little bit earlier about this off the air. You know, their offensive line for the last couple of years has been talked about in very negative terms because they weren't very good. This offensive line is playing pretty well. Even with Eric Woods on injury reserve, he got hurt at the end of the game against Seattle.
Yeah.
They plugged a guy in, 72, Ryan Groy. He's a good player, doing a solid job. They play very well together. And Tyrod Taylor leaves the pocket so many different times when he doesn't have to because the offensive line is doing a good job. And the big X factor is 25.
Right.
He's unbelievable.
He's got the thumb injury.
Yeah, but
they
he might play.
Him to be able to play.
LeSean McCoy is dynamic.
And they're saying Sammy Watkins could be back, at least in a limited capacity.
I don't worry about
this
him.
Week. You know what? Second half of last year, he's one of the best receivers in the National Football
League. Yeah, but coming back from injuries, I don't worry about him.
All right. I understand. I'm just throwing it out there. All right, Logs, we got to wrap it up. So we wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
And to you.
Good
and
to see
all the listeners.
Absolutely. And we'll talk to you Sunday for the pre and post and all that stuff. What do you have coming up? I know you got a little downtime, but
a little bit. Got no radio on Thursday. Outdoor show on Saturday, and then game broadcast on Sunday this week. But we do also have our Wednesday night television show, Jaguars Live. We will be at Dick's Wings and Grill over there off of Youngerman Circle at 8 o'clock.
All right, go out and see them live there with Loggy and the crew, and that'll do it for us today. Thanks for tuning in on a Check the Tape Tuesday with Jeff Logman. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, Logs. Same to you all out there in listener land, although Tony and I will be back for one more tomorrow. Ryan O'Halloran will be in. The Thanksgiving Grinch will join us as we'll get you ready for Jags and the Buffalo Bills coming up this Sunday at 1 o'clock Eastern time. That does it for us. Hey, no crosstalk coming up because Malik Jackson's awaiting on the other side at the top of the hour with the boys in the Midday Chalk. So stick around for that. For Fat Tony, for Joe Fortunato, for Tyler Devitt and Jeff Logman, I'm Mike Dempsey. Signing off for Jaguars today. Midday Chalk is next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
That's the best two-win team I've ever seen.
You guys have a good day. Peace.